Live from the WWDB AM Talk 860 studios in Philadelphia, this is Unexpected Goals. You give us 1 hour and we'll give you the soccer world. I'm Rich.
And I'm Rusty.
And we have a lot to talk about today. This is the first anniversary of our show. So happy anniversary to you, Rusty.
Big milestones. Happy to be here 1 year later. It's been great.
Did you get me anything?
We'll discuss.
Okay, fair enough. Yours is in UPS, and it keeps on looping, I think. So it might be in Lancaster, Reading, or maybe Altoona. Other stories. How last year's upstart in Serie A schooled this year's upstart. Speaking of five-goal games, how the mainstay in the Bundesliga overcame a two-goal deficit with a masterclass of a comeback all its own. Trouble at the bridge, as opposed to bridge over troubled waters. How Chelsea cannot seem to get into gear, and what that might mean for Frank Lampard. A look at managers who are doing well and perhaps could be on target for a move to bigger clubs, as opposed to just zeroing in on managers who are vulnerable to getting the sack. Sheffield United broke a century-old record in the top league in English football, and why no one is happy about it, even people probably at Derby County. Traffic jams at the top of the major leagues in Europe, with a concern that without a proper summer break, many teams are running on fumes. And finally, Mesut Ozil may be on the move. Finally.
Finally.
And maybe coming stateside. Also, a reminder that we are on social media, so check us out on Twitter at UnXGoals. That's UNX as in EX goals. And on Facebook, just look for Unexpected Goals. Follow our personal accounts, too, at Rusty_Gorlick and at GorlickRich. This show also streams live on WWDBAM.com, and you can access prior shows on that website as well. Here's our plug for SafeHub. SafeHub is a nonprofit organization running soccer-based youth development programs at Lighthouse Fields across from St. Chris's Hospital in Kensington in North Philadelphia. SafeHub works with over 100 kids in North Philadelphia to provide high-quality out-of-school time activities for kids, using soccer as a conduit for personal development and leadership building. SafeHub focuses on creating safe spaces for healthy relationship building with peers and coaches, especially for young people who might not have access to these support structures in their daily lives. SafeHub is rapidly expanding, projecting to triple its participant reach this year with the right support, and that means you. To get involved or to donate, visit usa.safe-hub.org. And if you donate, ask them for one of these very cool face masks, which has an orange soccer ball. It's black and with an orange soccer ball and a trophy. It looks really nice.
Yeah, and they have a little piece of wire on the top part of the mask so it can fit to your nose really well. Very, very good masks.
It's very, very good masks. Rusty, soccer birthdays. Your bailiwick. Who do we got today?
Yeah, so first up, we have Carlos Alaña, central midfielder for FC Barcelona, turning 23. He's a product of the La Masia Academy. Jose Luis Palomino, the Argentine international who plays center back for Atalanta, turns 31. Tino Cadaver, a center forward for Olympique Lyon, one of their best players this season, turns 25. Matthias Svanberg, central midfielder for Bologna, he turns 21. And Leroy Fair, the Dutch international, sometimes gets called up, sometimes doesn't. He plays as a defensive midfielder for Feyenoord, turns 30. Seems like just yesterday when he was one of the next wonder kids up.
That's right. For I think he spent some time at Queen's Park Rangers.
Queen's Park Rangers and Norwich, I believe.
And Norwich. Okay, Rusty. What do we do? It is time for the Emmanuel Petit Honorary Man Bun Player of the Week Award, the farewell tour or the farewell concert today.
Yeah, so I'll just give a little background into my decision-making here. I want to expose our listeners to a wider collection of players who you might not otherwise hear about, and the man bun crowd can stay pretty static for long periods of time. After the final Petit Award, which is coming up right now, I'll introduce my new segment. So that's why I just wanted to change it up a little bit, but this week, the final winner of the Petit Award maybe I'll come back if a man bun player has a exceptionally great week in the future, but every week it's just too inconsistent. So the final winner of the weekly award this week is Aaron Wan-Bissaka, the right back for Manchester United. He had an assist in his club's 2-1 win over Aston Villa, as well as 4 tackles, 2 interceptions, 2 clearances, 1 blocked shot, and 3 out of 4 dribbles completed. No players dribbled past him in the game, and he could be rounding a corner in his attacking development, which has lacked since he joined Manchester United. He did join as a defensive specialist right back, and they're hoping that he can turn into a real two-way player on that right side.
Well, you know, when you talk about Aaron Wan-Bissaka, it's the old joke that we've had, and I just started to watch The Mandalorian on your recommendation, is that if we merged families of a former Chelsea central midfielder, an attacking midfielder for Everton, and Aaron Wan-Bissaka, we could create the soccer player Obi-Wan Iwobi.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it.
Right?
I like it. Yeah,
John Obi Mikel and Alex Iwobi and Aaron Wan-Bissaka all together.
An homage to a great Jedi as well, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Who doesn't like Obi-Wan?
Right. Exactly.
And yes, so to introduce the new segment, it is called The Player of the Week That You Have Never Heard Of. So here I'm going to pick a standout player who you, as the title of the award suggests, you probably haven't heard of. So the inaugural winner of this award in the first episode of 2021 of Unexpected Goals is Brian Gil of Eibar, on loan from Sevilla. He's a 19-year-old left winger, and he scored both of his team's goals in a 2-0 win over 7th place Granada, while Eibar are in 12th place, arguably punching above their weight for one of the minnows of La Liga.
They really are a minnow. They play in a stadium that seats 8,000 people that can't be expanded because it's surrounded by a highway and it's carved into the mountains in a beautiful part of the Basque Country. And I saw Gil play a couple of weeks ago. The one thing about him is he looks so young. He even looks younger than the young striker that they have, Fabio
Silva,
who's of Wolves. I mean, he looks even younger than Silva. I don't know if Silva's even 20.
Yeah, he's not. And Gil sort of has a Beatles haircut going on, kind of a classic look. And Eibar, you can learn more about them in the Amazon Prime show Six Dreams, where the president of Eibar is followed around doing her job day to day, sort of life of being the president of one of the smaller clubs in La Liga. Very interesting stuff.
Yes.
And Rich, you alluded to this at the top of the show, a little bit of a change in format to your endangered managers list, focusing on the negatives as well as the positives in 2021. I think that's a good resolution. So the biggest news in the past few weeks saw sackings at PSG, West Brom, and now Athletic Bilbao most recently. So what's new on the endangered managers front?
Well, it's funny how the list works, right? At the season's outset, we had Ole Gunnar Solskjaer of Manchester United atop the list. And now Manchester United are in second, and that's only because of goal differential. So he's a candidate for manager of the year right now. So far away from that proverbial relegation zone for managers, which is the unemployment line. And we probably did not have Frank Lampard of Chelsea on any lists at the season's outset. He impressed us steering Chelsea to a Champions League spot last season.
Especially amid the transfer ban.
Exactly. And there were concerns that as a relatively new manager, his inexperience would show guiding a club with a huge budget and even bigger expectations. And now Chelsea finds itself in eighth place with 26 points, a sum that 3 other clubs have as well. They got thrashed at home 3-1 at the hands of a renewed, if depleted, Manchester City squad. Manchester City didn't even have a full bench. And if Chelsea doesn't get into gear soon, and most certainly if they do not finish in a Champions League position at the season's end, my view is Lampard will be gone. Now, Tom Rennie, friend of the show, guest on the show, says, look, if you hire a guy to do a job at the beginning of the season, he's the same guy, don't change in the middle of the season, what can you expect? And he might be right, but Roman Abramovich didn't get to where he is by being a normal, rational human being. He changes managers the way some people change underwear, and Lampard has to be feeling it. Chelsea looked asleep until stoppage time at the end of the second half. And you have to remember that Chelsea has a lot of money. When a lot of clubs started squirreling away money because of the drop in the economy, they came up with a three-year plan to win the Premier League next year. In this past transfer window, they spent 20% of all of the transfer fees in the Premier League, which is a staggering sum. And instead of advancing, they've slipped. And people worried that it was because their defense wouldn't be up to snuff. We thought at the beginning of the season they'd win games 4-2. They haven't been able to generate any offense. Their defense hasn't been that bad. Yeah. And in Edouard Mendy, they seem to have solved their problem at goalie, replacing Kepa Arrizabalaga. So that's a hard one to figure. Now, that Chris Wilder has not been sacked at Sheffield United, which set the record for the most consecutive matches at the top English league without a win. There are now 17 matches without a win, wow, which is what we alluded to at the beginning. There are a few things to consider. First, the team, Rusty, is very thin on talent. And second, it's been depleted with injuries. They had a short bench this past week in their loss at Crystal Palace, missing 9 players. Then they had 6 guys on the bench, and you're allowed 9. They didn't have John Lundstrom. They didn't have some other players as well. And they didn't do much in the offseason to improve, save to add what's become a struggling Rian Brewster, a huge acquisition from Liverpool, to their attack.
And he was never going to be a sure thing either, because he hardly had any top tier. He didn't really have any Premier League experience. He had a decent year in the Championship last year with Swansea, but wasn't lighting it up really.
No. And they're missing some of the people who really helped bring it home for them last year. If you look at it, and you know, my guess is they're not going to sell players in this transfer window. They're going to try to straighten out their roster, get everybody healthy, improve their play, and get the club in shape for promotion run from the league championship next year to get promoted again. And the manager who got them promoted the last time will be the manager who will get them promoted the next time, Chris Wilder. So I think ownership there, ownership doesn't have a lot of money there compared to other clubs. Mm-hmm. It seems like a smart move. But one thing I'd like to add to this feature, and our crack research department in Bucks County and bucolic part of Bucks County, I think the place overlooks a Chick-fil-A, manager on the rise we're going to talk about from time to time, who you might not have heard of. And this week's nominee, winner, person worthy of mention is Julien Stéphane, the 40-year-old manager for Rennes, which is currently in fourth place in Ligue 1 and would qualify for a Champions League spot. During his career, he played for PSG's B team, Toulouse, and then some lower league clubs. This is his third season at Rennes, and at 40 years old, we'd have to consider him as having some significant runway to higher profile jobs.
Yes, Rennes certainly a team that's punching above their weight as well. They're in the I don't know if they're still in the Champions League, but they qualified for the Champions League last season with Eduardo Camavinga and I don't even know.
Edouard Mendy was their goalie.
Oh, right. But not necessarily a spectacular roster, so he's really doing a great job with them.
And with younger players, typically, because the average age in that league is younger. And with that, Rusty, we've modified our feature a bit. It's our soccer tweeter best quote of the weekend. And the only reason we added best quote is you never know what Neil Warnock is going to say.
It's true.
But what do you got for the soccer tweet of the weekend?
So it is a tweet this weekend. And Bleacher Report Football tweeted on New Year's Day that Leo Messi can start negotiating with other teams this January, this month, since his contract with FC Barcelona ends in June. So Spartak Moscow quoted the tweet.
We've been to their stadium.
We have been to their stadium.
It's really nice.
Nice stadium. Their official account tweeted a screenshot of a fake Instagram DM exchange where they start the conversation to Lionel Messi's account saying, "Hi, Leo." And Lionel Messi, in quotes, Lionel Messi responded with straight up lowercase, one word, no. So they screenshotted that and captioned it, pain. And they've gotten quite a few likes and retweets. Well-earned, great content, very self-deprecating. I like it.
I think it's awesome. And those funny guys at Spartak Moscow, when we were there, they had pretty good food at the concession stands. The only thing that was weird was when I went to send a text message to a friend back in the States, we ended up voting in the Georgia primary. So that was the only thing that was a little bit weird about that.
That's classic. But Rich, you do a lot of research on this, always looking ahead to what matches will make headlines. So which games are you watching out for this week?
Well, it's interesting because the Germans-Knicks, they're usually long winter break, that six-week winter break, because it's so cold in Germany. And the French did take about 10 days off around Christmas and New Year's, so they resume tomorrow, Wednesday. And meanwhile, everyone else seems to have jammed games into the past month. And, you know, the COVID results are getting worse. 40 people in the entourages or clubs in the Premier League tested positive as of this morning in the latest round of tests. And that's the highest yet. So what's on tap Wednesday? You can start the day by watching Antonio Conte's star-laden Inter, the hottest team in any of the five major leagues. They've won five in a row. Visit Sampdoria. And end it watching a Manchester derby, the League Cup semifinal featuring Manchester City visiting Manchester United at Old Trafford. And Lord knows how high the numbers will be in the lineup for Manchester City. You might see 15-year-olds playing because they're pretty thin. On Thursday, there's slim pickings, but you can catch upstart Cadiz in La Liga visit Pontevedra in a Copa del Rey match. And then Friday, Borussia Mönchengladbach hosts Bayern Munich and Aston Villa hosts Liverpool. The latter is an FA Cup contest. And Jurgen Klopp is also dealing with injuries. We'll get to this, but he started his skipper, Jordan Henderson, at center back in the disappointing match that they just played the other day. And so we'll see who's in those lineups. They typically like to play the varsity in those lineups, but we're not sure. And then Saturday, you can wake up to Everton's hosting Rotherham United in an FA Cup match, followed by Sevilla-Real Sociedad an hour later. Real Sociedad and Sevilla will be fighting for a Champions League berth in La Liga.
Yeah, that's definitely one to watch.
I think it is. And then at 9:30 Eastern, you have Union Berlin, one of the big pleasant surprises of this year, hosting Wolfsburg, another pleasant surprise. And remember, when you see Wolfsburg, you can watch who?
Woot Weghorst
of Wolfsburg, our favorite one of my favorite players. And then you have Atletico Madrid hosts Athletic Club Bilbao at 10:15. Got all that so far? Take a little break at 12:30. RB Leipzig hosts Borussia Dortmund. Erling Haaland is back.
Yes, he is.
And Arsenal then hosts Newcastle in an FA Cup match at the same time. At 3:00, Osasuna hosts Real Madrid, while Rennes hosts Olympique Lyon, and that could be a good matchup. We don't know whether that's on BNTV or not, but we think it should be. And then Sunday, you can go from 6:30 Eastern all the way to about 5:00 Eastern. You literally could have almost 10 and a half hours of soccer. Wake up early for Roma, fast rising Roma, by the way.
Speaking of Roma, I did see a chart where they make they are the best team in terms of creating high quality and frequent chances in Europe. So they're definitely a team to watch because they can put the ball in the back of the net.
They definitely can, and they have been. And that should be a cracker of a match to start the day. And then Manchester City hosts Birmingham City in FA Cup action. So Man City goes from the Carabao League Cup to the FA Cup. And again, they're limping. And then Chelsea hosts Morecambe at the same time. At noon, FA Cup action, 8th Division Marine hosts Tottenham Hotspur. I mean, these guys are so low, I think they're a Sunday club.
Yeah, sounds about right.
And then at 2:45 in the bookend best match of the day, when you get through some of these English mismatches, Juventus hosts Sassuolo. And that should be a good match as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Russ, moving to headlines. We go through this. This is a relatively new feature of the show. Tell us about some of the biggest stories.
Right. So we'll start off on a bit of a sad note. So too often you can hear people, you know, talk about COVID-19 as if it's just a bad cold. You get exposed, you isolate, you get over it. And for many, that can be the case. But for others, there can be lingering and even really long-term effects. So Nigel Pearson, the former Watford manager, has said that he caught it in the spring and still has lingering effects. And more recently, we've read reports that two mainstays for Newcastle United, their captain and center back Jamal Lascelles and breakout winger and good Twitter follow, Alan St. Maximin, have struggled with their health and their fitness, as they apparently are becoming exhausted after just taking half-hour long walks. We really wish them a speedy recovery and a quick return to the pitch. And to reiterate, this is why social distancing and mask wearing are so important for all of us.
That's right. Notwithstanding some of the lunacy that can be broadcast by others on this station from time to time, it's not about you personally, it's about society.
And you never know who can have those long-term effects. If some of the best athletes in the world can, then you never know.
That's right. And that's what's really stunning. And they've been taking a lot of care to distance. And speaking of COVID, we had reported last week that the English Premier League was considering a two-week break to let all teams get to a better level of fitness and health after random COVID outbreaks have caused postponements of matches featuring a number of clubs. But despite these postponements, the Premier League declined to create this break, Rusty, stating that it believes its protocols for dealing with COVID have been effective and that the season will continue on.
Interesting. So, again, in more virus-related news, sadly, three Tottenham players, Jose Reguilón, Giovanni Lo Celso, and Eric Lamela, were identified as breaking team and league protocols when they gathered with West Ham's Manuel Lanzini over Christmas. It's not clear whether any tested positive for COVID, but the story drew many headlines. Reguilón was on the bench for Tottenham's last match, and while neither Lo Celso nor Lamela was listed among the 20 named in the squad for the match,
they didn't get suspended, though.
They didn't get suspended. Yeah. Three of the four players are Argentinian, and this gathering shows that clubs are not only dealing with the effects of the virus, but also another potentially damaging factor, which is loneliness. And in more outrageous rather than unfortunate COVID news, Manchester City's Benjamin Mendy was under fire for his antics on New Year's Eve. He hosted his girlfriend, his niece, nephew, a chef, and two of his girlfriend's friends. And when asked about it, Pep Guardiola told the press to look in the mirror and put the same expectations on themselves that they put on footballers. And to that, I say, yikes.
What, right. I mean, it was totally irresponsible. And Mendy has been a disappointment after such a promising start at Manchester City. And this loneliness thing, though, these are young guys and they're in foreign cultures. And not all the players have like the bubble they say they do at Wolves, where there's this group of Portuguese players. There are 9 or 10 of them. And Ruben Neves is one of the leaders, and he cooks, and they all gather together. These guys are in London, and the holidays, it was tough. And we're not sitting in judgment, but it just goes to show you how hard it is to keep teams healthy and to keep everything contained. On a different note, there are always stories about hot young American prospects. They seem to be coming out of the woodwork. And the next hot young American to watch, apparently, is New York Red Bulls 17-year-old midfielder Caden Clark. We would argue here in Philadelphia, it's the Philadelphia Union's 17-year-old midfielder,
Paxton Aronson.
Yep. But in any way, the Minnesota native is said to be on the radar of many of the top clubs in Europe, including Juventus and RB Leipzig. He has a clause in his contract that will see a move to Leipzig if they activate it within the next 2 years or so. And this is a name to pay attention to, Caden Clark. And he'll be one of many as the weeks go on, because the U.S. now is really reaping a harvest of good young players.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of American milestones, history of sorts happened this weekend in the Chelsea-Manchester City match, where two starters for the U.S. men's national team became the first two Pennsylvanians to face off against each other in an English Premier League match. Coatesville's Zach Steffens started in goal for Manchester City, while Chelsea's Christian Pulisic from Hershey, I believe, started as a winger for the London side.
That's right. And he is from Hershey, and it's the center of the state east. Notice Hershey is really smack in the center of the state. And I'm sure that wasn't probably too hard to do the research on. I don't know if outside of Pulisic of any Pennsylvanians played in the Premier League before him. And then we go to, of course, the biggest stars on the stage. Cristiano Ronaldo scored twice this weekend for Juventus against Udinese, seemingly now a Manchester City farm club, to give him 758 for his career, surpassing Pele for second on the all-time goal scoring list. And you wondered who is first. Mm-hmm. And first is Slavia Prague legend Josef Bican, who scored 805 goals in 530 matches between 1931 and 1955. So Cristiano Ronaldo, you would think Rusty will keep those abs in shape for several more seasons so he can break Bican's record. I'm sure he's going to stay and try to do that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Pele, I don't think he agrees with Cristiano Ronaldo claiming that record because the joke is he counts all his goals that he scored in training to his 1,000 or so career goals that he claims.
I hear maybe Pele today is in the White House trying to help the president find those votes in Georgia.
Nice one again. But it's January, so as for the transfer window, there's no huge news yet, and we don't expect any anytime soon given the pandemic, its effect on finances, and how hard it is to move players in January during even normal times. But the first move of note is that Arsenal have loaned their promising center back William Saliba to Nice in Ligue 1 in order to get him some playing time. And that loan, according to Charles Watts of Goal.com, former one-time guest on the show, is without an option to buy, as Saliba remains firmly in Arsenal's future plans.
And we hear that he's on the squad for the match, I think, on Wednesday. So they're going to try, and if not Wednesday this weekend, they're going to try to get Saliba in action quickly. We have some numbers. We've done some digging, and we have some numbers for you. And believe it or not, the first team to 10 wins in the English Premier League this season is Manchester United. Arsenal has more points on the road this year than either Liverpool or Chelsea, 13-11. And Arsenal's played Manchester City, Chelsea, Liverpool, and Tottenham on the road, or United, not Liverpool yet, but they played four of those five on the road already. And the only team in the top five leagues so far without a loss is Milan. Mm. Okay. And the only teams to give up 10 goals or fewer are PSG, 10. Leipzig, 9, and Atletico Madrid, 6. The only clubs to score more than 40 goals so far this year are Bayern Munich with 44 and Inter with 40. And the only club with a positive goal differential greater than 25 is PSG. So one thing we can infer there is that if Mauricio Pochettino just gets them in a little bit sharper focus, gets some people healthy, they could really hit the accelerator and maybe put some distance between themselves and everybody else. Because when we talk about Ligue 1, there's a jumble at the top, but there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, absolutely. And some more sad news, though. Jerry Marsden, the lead singer for Jerry and the Peacemakers.
The Pacemakers.
Misread that. And the iconic voice behind the Liverpool anthem, You'll Never Walk Alone, passed away on Sunday at the age of 78.
Yeah, that's very sad news, and certainly an iconic song for any soccer team, probably the most iconic song of them all. We're going to go to the Premier League. Russ, let me take you, everybody, through the standings, and then you'll start taking us through games. It's really crowded at the top. Most teams have played 16 or 17 matches, save Manchester City, which has played only 15. Liverpool in top on goal differential with 33 points over Manchester United. Leicester City in third with 32. Tottenham in fourth with 29. And then Manchester City in fourth with 29. Everton in fifth with 29. Everton in sixth with 29. Aston Villa in seventh. Chelsea in eighth. Southampton in ninth and West Ham in 10th, all with 26. Villa's only played 15 matches, too, so a lot can happen. And don't forget, there are 38 matches in a season, so this season is not even halfway over. And five teams are between 23 and 19 points from 11th to 15th place. So if somebody goes on a run, they could crack that top 10 and beyond. And you have some very good clubs in Arsenal and Wolves in the bottom 10. So, Rusty, why don't we talk about the biggest match of the weekend?
Yeah, so it was the 3-0 Manchester City victory over Chelsea on Sunday. It took place at Stamford Bridge, and Manchester City came out fast and furious. The Blues did not know what hit them after 34 minutes. City led 3-0 on goals by Ilkay Gundogan, Phil Foden.
Phil Foden!
Hey,
29 minutes
I just want to say
seconds.
I'm right. I just want to say that I'm right because whenever he starts, he seems to score or at least get an assist.
Just like Chris Carter, he catches touchdowns.
Yeah. Thing is with Phil Foden, or more with Pep Guardiola, is that he doesn't always start Phil Foden, which I don't understand. But that's the way it went into halftime. Could have been a lot worse, and Chelsea really just didn't show up. They got one back 2 minutes into stoppage time at the end of the game when Callum Hudson-Odoi made a great hard run on a counterattack, to tap in a nice cross from the sort of out-of-favor Kai Havertz. City, surprisingly, given the fact that it's a Pep Guardiola team, only had 45% possession, but they took 18 shots to Chelsea's 9. See what happens when you push the action and don't wait for the defense to get set? Cough, cough, Pep.
That's right.
And City had 6 shots on goal to Chelsea's 2. City completed 88% of its passes. Chelsea completed 90%. And we pointed out the passing completion percentages because, you know, City plays a bit of a conservative style in order to get itself into the right shape. It's called juego de posición, Pep Guardiola's philosophy. That's my Spanish little accent coming in there for that nomenclature. But the stat can be misleading because it obviously puts a premium on, you know, more conservative passing than it does on actually taking risks and trying to create chances. So give Pep Guardiola credit. Even without Gabriel Jesus and with Sergio Aguero on the bench, he opened up his attack and played some beautiful run-and-gun football. Chelsea really had no answer for it. As for Chelsea, this high percentage of completion suggests that they are not opening up their attack the way that they need to, especially for what would be the best way to get the most out of Timo Werner. At the season's outset, we had thought, I think as we alluded to earlier, that they'd be winning games like 4-2. But that's just not happening. They're not scoring. And right now, Frank Lampard has a lineup that is attractive for a FIFA 21 club, but it just has not really come together on the pitch. And he might be running out of time, as you said earlier, and atop all that.
Well, well said, by the way, about that FIFA 21 club, because they're the all-stars who you want to buy when you have plenty of money.
Yeah.
But it's just not working yet.
Yeah, and atop all that, City did not have Ederson, Aymeric Laporte, Nathan Ake, Kyle Walker, Gabriel Jesus, Eric Garcia, who is going to sign for FC Barcelona in the summer on a free transfer, and Ferran Torres, and he only had 8 substitutes out of the possible 9, and 2 of those subs had jersey numbers of 78 and 79. So
right, and one of them was Tyler Harwood-Bellis, a very good prospect at center back, but not ready yet.
Yeah, yeah, and it could be a watershed match for both clubs the day that City really became serious and started to challenge for the Premier League title in earnest, and the day Chelsea revealed itself as on the outside looking in for a Champions League spot. But as we like to say, there's plenty of football left to be played.
Well, I recall a game, Rusty, years ago when Antonio Conte was managing Chelsea. They went to the Emirates and they played Arsenal, and they had 4 at the back and they got blown out 3-0. It wasn't close. It was shambolic for Chelsea. And Conte, tough customer, looked in the mirror and then made a big change. They went to a 3-4-3 with only 3 at the back, and then Chelsea won the league.
And that was kind of unheard of, that sort of formation for the Premier League. At that time.
And now it's like that 3 at the back with the 2 wingbacks who move up has become more popular. So we'll see what Pep does, especially because he's had some problems with health up front and also because of COVID. They are a bit depleted, and they do have the Carabao coming up against United, and they also have the FA Cup. And speaking of United, they won in controversial fashion, I thought, over Aston Villa at Old Trafford 2-1. This weekend on goals by a seemingly hotter Anthony Martial, who struggled with his form, and Bruno Fernandes on another penalty, this time when it seemed that midfielder Paul Pogba initiated contact with his defender and then went down in the box. The VAR referee did not reverse the call, but that did not prevent the pundits all over England from once again criticizing player conduct and the officiating. Bertrand Traore scored Villa's lone goal at the 58th minute, at the time tying the game up. And something, Rusty, has to be done about the current state of play in all of football, and particularly the Premier League, because if there's any contact in the box, it seems that the attacking player, except for Alex Lacazette, goes down automatically. And if he does, the referee is likely to blow his whistle for a penalty at a much greater frequency than in any past year and by a wide margin. And because the standard is a clear and reversible error, sometimes the VAR officials reluctant to reverse the call. But it was really just a bad call, and it had a major effect on the outcome of the game. United had 48 possession and 19 shots, including 9 on goal, while Villa had 15 shots and 5 on goal. And United was chippy in the game. They committed 22 fouls to Villa's 10 and got 4 yellow cards. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer got an excellent performance from Eric Bailly at center back. And he started Paul Pogba among his attacking four, along with Bruno Fernandes, Marcus Rashford, and Anthony Martial, with Fred and Scott McTominay at midfield. He's flexing his depth a little bit, and United looks in very good form.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, ESPN FC tweeted this stat yesterday, that among the big six, the traditional big six clubs, since the start of last season, Manchester United have been awarded 6 more penalties than the second highest team. They have 20. The next highest team is Manchester City with 14. That's since the beginning of last season.
It seems to be just a statistical outlier, but something where I think they have to do something about either the rule or the interpretation of the rule about contact in the box.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
So Leicester City won 2-1 at Newcastle thanks to goals by James Maddison and Yuri Tielemans. The hosts got one back at the 82nd minute when Andy Carroll scored. Leicester City seems to be returning to full health. Keglar Sionsu came off the bench. And meanwhile, the Longstaff brothers, Sean and Matty, started alongside each other at center midfield for Newcastle. And from our view, the last time brothers started together for a club probably goes back to the early 2000s when the Neville brothers, Gary and Phil, started for Manchester United, because we don't think that Jacob and Josh Murphy started together for Newcastle, for Norwich, the time before last when they were up in the Premier League, and now they're not on the same team anymore.
One might be able to say that Newcastle started the Longstaff brothers because they were short-staffed.
Hey, actually, that's probably right. And Steve Bruce, their manager, said they did okay. And then another Jose Mourinho masterclass as Tottenham beat Sheffield United 3-0 in North London on goals by Heung-Min Son, Harry Kane, and Toby Alderweireld. I think Son and Kane have scored something like...
They played Leeds, right?
I'm sorry, it was Leeds United. That's right. And I think Son and Kane, if Tottenham scored 32 goals, they scored like 28 of them, which goes to show you that if one of them goes down, I think Spurs are in big trouble. Spurs had only 36% possession, but 20 shots to Leeds 18. Spurs had seven shots on goal to Leeds 5. Matt Doherty, who should have known better, picked up his second yellow card in the second minute of stoppage time at the game's end and was sent off. Heung-Min Son, congratulations, scored his 100th goal for Tottenham. Harry Kane assisted on Son's goal, and Tanguy Ndombele continues to emerge as a box-to-box midfielder for the Spurs, looking dangerous when moving the ball forward. At this point, Christian Eriksen seems to be a distant memory.
And yesterday, Southampton hosted Liverpool and got off to a hot start, Southampton, as Danny Ings scored a beautiful chip finish over Alisson in the third minute off a free kick from who else but James Ward-Prowse.
And if you're going to watch any goal on YouTube, watch that one. An amazing finish by Danny Ings. Just tremendous.
Yeah, great body control, great tactical ability. And it took Liverpool until the 75th minute to get their first shot on target. They had 13 shots in general before that. Fabinho and Jordan Henderson started at center back for Jurgen Klopp's side. I didn't think they were the biggest problems in this game, though. Trent Alexander-Arnold had a bad game. He and Mo Salah had rather careless performances in terms of ball control down the right side. And yes, Liverpool do play a very direct style, but 61% and 55% passing accuracy for those two respectively is not good. Southampton, they're very good at never allowing their opponents space or time to breathe, really. They're always running, and it's really impressive how they defend and seem to be all over the place. And The Saints again proved that they're a hard team to beat. They had 33% possession against Liverpool, and they cleared the ball 36 times compared to Liverpool's 3. So they withstood the pressure, certainly.
Wow.
And Ralf Hasenhüttl was in tears at the end of the match because of how far his team has come, how far he has come. Certainly a well-deserved win, and good example for trusting the process with managers, especially if you're not really in danger of relegation, because they have come a long way since the 9-0 loss that commentators seem to never let them forget about.
Right. They lost to Leicester City at Southampton a year ago, 9-0, and they stayed the course with Hasenhüttl. Mm-hmm. He actually got a 4-year deal at the end of last season, and he certainly proved worthy of it. And then in other matches of note, gritty West Ham squad gutted it out on the road for a 1-0 win at Everton, thanks to a goal from another player who's really having a breakthrough this year, Thomas Souček, in the 86th minute. West Ham managed only 40% possession, but had one more shot than the hosts and 3 more shots on goal. Arsenal won its 3rd straight, slamming West Brom into submission at the Hawthorns on a brace from Alex Lacazette and a goal apiece from Kieran Tierney. That's another one to watch, a stunner.
Yeah, Bukayo
Saka, which was the tick-attack football that Arsenal can be known for. Mm-hmm. Arsenal at 62% possession, 21 shots and 12 on target. The latter two figures the most under Mikel Arteta's time as manager of the club. And if you look at this, Rusty, it looks like Jurgen Klopp and Mikel Arteta switched brains, because Arsenal took the ball right up the middle, and Liverpool had something like 33 crosses against Southampton. And Michael Cox made an interesting point his website, saying that one of the big difference from Arsenal is that they were one-sided, and that they had Bukayo Saka and Kieran Tierney going down the left side doing really well, and then Nicola Pepe Hector Bellerin going down the right side. And what Arteta did was put Saka on the right side and Aubameyang on the left side, so that he balanced out the attack a bit and you couldn't be lopsided in your defense. And Arsenal, as a result, has won 3 straight matches. So, Rusty, moving on, because we might get today to a lot of players to watch if there's time. Why don't you give us the league leaders and who's hot and who's not?
Right. So, in terms of goals, Mohamed Salah is first with 13, then Heung-min Son with 12, then Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Jamie Vardy and Bruno Fernandes are all tied with 11. And after them, it's Patrick Bamford and Harry Kane with 10 apiece. And then in assists, Harry Kane has 11, Kevin De Bruyne has 8, Jack Grealish and Bruno Fernandes have 7, and 4 players are tied with 5. And the hottest clubs in the last 5 matches are first, Manchester United with 13 points, Everton have 12, Manchester City have 11, Arsenal have 10, and then Burnley and Leeds each have 9. And in terms of the coldest clubs, the coldest is Sheffield United. They have 1 point in their last 5. West Brom have 2 points in their last 5. 1 came at Liverpool, though, so that's something.
Right.
That's a consolation prize, I guess. And then Brighton and Fulham are tied with 4 points.
Right, and it's very interesting in all these leagues. And we'll move on to La Liga. And typically what we'll try to do in some fashion is give you the top of the table and then the results from the top of the table. The standings after 15 games for Atletico Madrid, they have 38 points. They have 2 games at hand on second place Real Madrid, which is 36. Then there's a gap. Real Sociedad in third with 30, but they played 18 matches. Mm. Villarreal in fourth with 29. After 17 matches, and Barcelona in fifth with 28 points after 16 matches. 5 clubs have between 20 and 27 points. And results from the weekend, Atletico Madrid had trouble at 10-man El Aves, winning 2-1 and needing a goal, Rusty, in the 90th minute from Luis Suarez to do it. Marcos Llorente, who's having a great year, scored at the 41st minute to put the league leaders ahead. And things were going fine until the 84th minute, when Felipe scored an own goal. And this after the hosts were playing with 10 men since the 63rd minute, when Victor LaGuardia, no relation, we think, to Fiorello, was sent off with a straight red. And Diego Simeone is relying on his depth, because João Félix and Saúl and Jeffrey Kondogbia started the game on the bench for the visitors. And then Real Madrid beat a good Celta Vigo squad 2-0 in Madrid at the Alberto Di Stefano Stadium. They're not playing at the Bernabeu, thanks to goals from Luis Vasquez and Marco Asensio, who scored his first goal of the season. And they scored one goal per half. You know, the biggest highlight there was Eden Hazard came off the bench in his first minutes for Real Madrid this season. And among others, Eduardo Militao, Hazard, Marcelo, Federico Valverde, Luka Jovic, Vinicius Jr., Martin Odegaard, and Isco were all on the bench for the hosts. When you think about that.
Must be nice.
Must be nice. And remember that Valverde and Odegaard started the season in the starting lineup, but they gave way to the seniors tour of Toni Kroos and Luka Modric. And then quickly, Real Sociedad, who's fading, drew at home with Osasuna 1-1. And after a blistering start, Sociedad has managed only 4 points in its last 5 matches. And that's, of course, out of a possible 15. And Villarreal won 2-1 at home against Levante. They got a lot of shots and a lot of shots on target, but they're fading a bit too. They have only 8 points in the last 5. And then Barcelona won 1-0 at Huesca, thanks to a goal by Frankie de Jong in the 27th minute off a beautiful pass from Lionel Messi.
It was a great goal.
It was a great goal. And Barcelona were without Ansu Fati, Gerard Pique, Sergio Roberto, Felipe Coutinho, and Samuel Umtiti, and started the game with Antoine Griezmann on the bench. Must be nice.
Yeah, Umtiti is back in training for Barcelona, though, and should be available this week for whenever their next game is. So that's good news.
And he's a good center back. And then I'll just run through the scoring leaders, and Russ will take you through Serie A. Goals, Iago Aspas, having a great year for Celta Vigo, has 9, along with Gerard Moreno of Villarreal and Luis Suarez. And then Karim Benzema of Real Madrid has 8. Messi has 7. And Mikel Oyarzabal for Real Sociedad, that's a hard one, has 7. And then Aspas,
5 of which are penalties.
That's right. Aspas has 6 assists. And Angel Correa of Atletico has 5. Benzema has 5. And you could see Aspas and Benzema are vying for Player of the Year honors. And of course, Messi will get it. and the hottest clubs in the last 5 matches, Real Madrid is 13 points. Atletico Madrid is 12. Barca has 11. Sevilla has 11. Celta Vigo is 9. Granada has 9, and the coldest clubs, Elche 2, Osasuna 3, and Valencia, which once mighty Valencia, in 17th place and in danger of relegation, Rusty, has 3 points.
Yeah, so moving on to Serie A, pretty tight at the very top of the table. Table's starting to look a little bit like La Liga. 15 matches for most clubs. AC Milan are in first place with 37 points. Internacional Milan are in second with 36. Then it's Roma with 30. Fourth place with 14 matches played are Napoli with 28 points. Fifth place, also with 14 matches played, is Juventus with 27 points. Then on 15 matches played, in sixth is Sassuolo with 26 points. And then Atalanta is in seventh on 25 points.
Good clubs. Yes, all good clubs.
With 14 matches played. So first up, there's some high-scoring games in this one. Inter beat Crotone 6-2. Went in at halftime, tied at 2-2. Lautaro Martinez had a hat-trick. Romelu Lukaku had a goal and an assist. And Ashraf Hakimi had a goal. All three of them are very fun players to watch. Crotone scored an own goal, and they scored off a header from a free kick in the 12th minute and then a penalty kick in the 36th minute. The foul was on Arturo Vidal. Super aggressive guy, so not too surprising.
Great haircut, too.
Yeah, always interesting, that man's head of hair. And then Atalanta schooled Sassuolo 5-1, as we alluded to earlier. Battle between last year's surprise club and this year's surprise club. It was really a vintage Atalanta performance. They went into halftime up 2-0. Juvan Zapata found space between defenders for his first goal in the 11th minute, and his second came in the 49th minute, and he also hit the post in the first half.
Very underrated.
Yeah, he's good. He might be getting a move somewhere, although Atalanta would do well to hold on to him. 23-year-old attacking midfielder / forward Matteo Pessina getting playing time in the absence of Papu Gomez, who I saw was rumored to join FC Cincinnati of MLS. We'll see about that one. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if there's any Northern or Italian or very good Northern Italian or Argentine cuisine in Cincinnati, but who knows?
Yeah. Also, just if you watch their games. but he got Len a second of the day on the cusp of halftime when Josip Ilicic carried the ball down the right and crossed for Pacino to volley home. Robin Gosens and Luis Muriel wrapped up the scoring by the 67th minute for Atalanta. And then Tottenham legend.
And Romanian legend.
Romanian legend. I say Tottenham legend in jest somewhat. Vlad Chirikes, he got Sassuolo's consolation goal in the 75th minute. Juventus also put up some goals against Udinese. Rodrigo De Paul
won 4-1.
Yeah, they won 4-1. Rodrigo De Paul had a 12th minute goal ruled out for handball. It was kind of a bummer because he did some great off ball movement, but it was the right call. A Juventus high press led to Cristiano Ronaldo recovering the ball in the attacking third. He dribbled past a player, lasered the ball into the far side of the net from the left side of the box in the 31st minute. 4 minutes after halftime, Ronaldo slipped Federico Chiesa through on goal, and the Italian squeezed the ball between the keeper and the far post to double the lead. Ronaldo got another goal in the 70th minute. Then Marvin Ziegler got the consolation goal in the 90th minute. And then Paulo Dybala got a goal in the 3rd minute of second half stoppage time. Napoli went to Cagliari and won 4-1. Peter Zielinski, the Polish international midfielder, scored 2 goals. João Pedro, not the youngster on Watford, but a 28-year-old midfielder, equalized in the 60th minute. And Zielinski's second goal and goals from Irving Lozano and Lorenzo Insigne followed that up to seal it for the Neapolitans.
And Cagliari is rumored to get Brian Reynolds if he signs with Juventus on loan. And I don't know why Brian Reynolds would walk into that. Cagliari's in 17th place, in danger of relegation.
Yeah.
Doubt they're going to be playing a young American if they're trying to stay up. So we'll have to watch that.
Yeah, unless he is truly better than all their options at right back. And I'll go through some of the top scorers quickly. So Cristiano Ronaldo leads Serie A with 14 goals. Lukaku is in second with 12. And Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Ciro Immobile are tied for third with 10. And then in assists, Hakan Çalhanoğlu, Henrik Mkhitaryan, and Dries Mertens.
That's been stagnant for a while. Yeah, at 6.
All tied at 6. Alvaro Morata has 5. And then 13 players are tied with 4 assists apiece. The hottest clubs in the last 5 matches are Inter Milan, who have not even drawn. They have 15 points in the last 5.
Rolling a perfect slate.
Yeah, then Roma with 12, and then Milan and Atalanta with 11. Juve have 10. And then the coldest clubs are Spezia, 1 point in their last 5, Cagliari, 2 points in their last 5, and Parma also with 2 points in their last 5, and quite a relegation battle going on in this league.
And Roma really has surged. They've won 4 of their last 5, and they were more like in 7th or 8th or down, and they've been charging, and they're playing very nice football. So moving on to the Bundesliga, and while we're not going to spend much time on Ligue 1 because I haven't done anything, we'll get to who's hot and who's not. In the Bundesliga, Bayern Munich is in first with 33 points, all after 14 matches. RB Leipzig in second with 31, followed by Bayer Leverkusen with 28, Borussia Dortmund with 25, Union Berlin with 24, Wolfsburg with Wout Weghorst with 24, and Borussia Mönchengladbach with 21. Sead Kolasinac joined his former club Schalke on loan. They are dead last with 4 points and have not won a match. 6 points off 16th place, which would put them in the relegation playoff.
And here's a funny story. Tasmania Berlin are rooting hard for Schalke to get a win so that Schalke do not overtake Tasmania's record of 31 straight Bundesliga matches without a win. Schalke are on 30 matches without a win after Saturday's 3-0 loss to Hertha Berlin. Can Sead Kolasinac save the day? Probably not.
Yeah, he's a tough left back. He saved Mesut Ozil from being kidnapped or assaulted, but and he'll probably do okay, but they need a lot more than that. So quickly through the results, Bayern Munich was down to Mainz, 2-0 at halftime in Munich, and people thought that it could be an upset. And then they found their form, and I'm sure that Hansi Flick gave them either guided meditation or something to do at halftime.
Or he just yelled at them.
Or he just yelled at them or just walked out. But It was a 5-goal second half for Bayern. All came between the 50th and 83rd minutes. So 33 minutes separated their first and last. Joshua Kimmich opened the scoring and assisted Leroy Sané 5 minutes later. Nicolas Sule, the fine center back, scored a chippy goal in the box at the 70th minute. Robert Lewandowski, of course, would not miss this party, scored a penalty, and then a nice finish off a cross from a Thomas Muller to finish the scoring. Dortmund beat Wolfsburg 2-0 in a battle of teams trying to qualify for Champions League play. Jadon Sancho had a great game, scored his first goal of the season after almost 1,000 minutes of play with some great skills on a breakaway in second half stoppage time. Dortmund had 59% possession. Wolfsburg had 21 shots to Dortmund's 14, but Dortmund was more accurate, had 7 shots on target to Wolfsburg's 5. And Weghorst of Wolfsburg did not score, and he had been hot.
Also, that one shows that possession does not win you games.
Well, exactly. And then Eintracht Frankfurt beat Bayer Leverkusen 2-1 on a goal from Nadim Amiri. And then an Edmund Tapsoba own goal sealed it for Eintracht Frankfurt. And it was a big win for Eintracht Frankfurt and a disappointing loss for Bayer Leverkusen. And again, Leverkusen had 66% possession, and it didn't matter. And then going on to goal leaders, this is just insane. Robert Lewandowski has 19 goals in 14 matches. In second place is Erling Haaland with 10. Wout Weghorst has 9. Andre Silva of Eintracht Frankfurt is 9. And then you have 3 players tied at 8. And then assists, Muller leads with 8. Kingsley Coman of Bayern has 7. And then Nadim Amiri has 6. And along with Christopher Trimmel of Union Berlin and Joshua Kimmich of Bayern Munich. And then 6 guys, including Lewandowski, are tied with 5. The hottest clubs in the last 5 matches, 9th place Freiburg, 13 points out of 15. Bayern Munich has 11, RB Leipzig 11, Bayer Leverkusen 9, but they lost 2 in a row, and Union Berlin 8, and then the coldest clubs in the last 5, Schalke with 1, Mainz with 1, and Werder Bremen with 3. Nothing has changed in Ligue 1, with, of course, a jumble at the top, Lille and Lyon with 36, and PSG with 35. And the hottest clubs, Lille and Lyon, 13 points in the last 5, Rennes 12, PSG 10, Lens 9. And then in the promotion update, Rusty, in the English Championship League, after 22 or 23 or 46 matches, what do we got?
Yeah, so up top are Norwich City with 47 points, followed by Swansea City with 43. Then Bournemouth and Brentford are level on points in third and fourth, with Bournemouth ahead on goal differential. Then Reading are in fifth with 40 points. And then from sixth to 10th, they are separated by 4 points.
So who gets promoted?
Who gets promoted? I think it'll be Norwich, Bournemouth, and Brentford.
That's a good call. I think Norwich definitely, and I think Bournemouth as well. And then I would love to see Neil Warnock get back in with Middlesbrough, but
that would be great.
They might be outside looking in. And then you know, as we're running out of time, who do you have in the Premier League?
Who wins the Premier League? That is the ultimate question. I think that it will end up being Liverpool.
Yeah, I would say City, but as depleted as Liverpool is, City might be worse off. And I don't see Chelsea getting it together. I don't think Leicester has enough quality. I don't think Everton has enough quality or Southampton to do it. As I look over the other clubs, Tottenham could, but they really need to put it together.
And before we go, how about tell me a player that you want to watch for the rest of the season?
Eduardo Camavinga,
that's a good choice. For me, I'm going to go with FC Barcelona and say either Frankie de Jong, Pedri, Sergiño Dest. Just watch Barcelona. You'll get all of them.
Okay, well, happy anniversary to us, because it's our first anniversary. We'd like to thank the man with the mask behind the glass, Brett Kronberger, engineering this show. Happy anniversary again to us.
happy New Year, too.
Happy New Year, exactly. You give us 1 hour, and we'll give you the soccer world. For Rusty, I'm Rich. This is Unexpected Goals. Have a great day.